This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
SansPants Radio, Australia's most procedurally generated podcast network.
Hey everyone, welcome to Bookish. This is a show where we ask you, what's your story and what does it say about you? I'm George Dimirellis, and on the show today we have former and current lawyer, current rapper and future president of Zimbabwe, Simba Mack. How you doing, Simba?
I'm good, bro. I'm good. How you doing?
I'm good.
Looks like you just fit all the tenses in there, man.
Yeah. Look, it's a lot to put in. I like to prime people early with what they're about to sit in on.
That's good, man. It's an honor to be here. Thanks for providing the platform.
No worries. I'm glad you're here. So I guess straight off the bat, I will clarify. You're Zimbabwe born. That's why your aspirations are to be president of Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe born and bred. Came to Australia in 2004 to study for university. So I landed in Perth, studied law and psychology at a university in Perth, and then graduated, moved to Sydney to start working as a lawyer and lived there for 6 years. And then I moved to Melbourne. I got a promotion the firm I was with, and yeah.
Nice. But now you've taken a step back from the legal side of things to focus on the music?
Rapper, yeah. Lawyer turned rapper, which is very interesting. I mean, look, I took the scenic route because I'm African by nature. So like, if you know any Africans, the first quarter of a century of your life, you probably, if you live that long, you're living for your parents, you know what I mean?
Okay.
You're living for your parents. Look, Corona's changing.
Heavy start, man.
Corona's changing a lot of stuff, you know what
Jesus.
I mean? You know, they might have to adjust the retirement age after this, you know, but RIP to those that lost their lives and stuff, man. It's been pretty tragic.
There's some serious tone shifts going on here, but yeah, keep going, yeah.
Yeah, but first 25 years are totally dedicated to your parents. So I remember at my graduation ceremony, like I always wanted to become a rapper because I always had this love for music and just words. So diction's always been my thing. So I've always wanted to express myself in very unconventional formats. So what was strange is like at my graduation ceremony, my mom flew all the way from Zim, you know, and we're getting the usual graduation photos, you know, with the certificates and the rest of it. And then I handed her my 2 degrees and I was like, there you go, mom. Thank you very much for everything. And she's like, okay, why are you giving them to me? And I was like, well, I want to pursue music. That was the deal, right? So I get the backup plan, to back up the backup plan, to back up the backup plan. Well, that's them, these 2 degrees. So now I want to go and do the thing that's on my heart. And she just looked at me like, you're crazy. Don't be stupid. You know, like legit African. She's like, nah. You're going to get a job. That's what you're going to do. Like, I'm a single mom. I didn't go through all of this so that you could just become a rapper. Like, that is just not the plan. Plus, you got 2 younger brothers you got to take care of. Nah, it's not going down like that over my dead body. So being the obedient son and everything. And I did have to step up because dad wasn't in the picture and stuff. So, you know, being the big brother and having to make sure my brothers went to school and university as well. So yeah, I did have those responsibilities to fulfill, you know, beyond my own aspirations. And everyone had sacrificed a lot for me to end up in Australia. You know, my mom sold a car, you know, to buy my plane ticket to even come here. And even for me to get my first semester's worth of university fees, I had to write a letter to 10 of the wealthiest businessmen I could find in Zimbabwe to see if someone could sponsor me. And it was only that the very last guy I went to see who said, I'll pay for your first semester. So at least you can get a visa to get in. And then once you're in, you know, you're on your own, You know, so you get immediate flashbacks, you know? You know, cause I could tell you heaps, man. Like, you know, like my dad wasn't in the picture, not just because my parents divorced, but because he was a banker and he stole money from the bank that he worked for. So he ended up being incarcerated for 6 years, you know, when I was a kid.
So do you still talk to him? You still see him?
No. I mean, we don't have much of a relationship. It's more transactional more than anything else. Like my obligation and my allegiance is to my mom because she's the one who paid the price and sacrificed.
So were they together until he went to prison?
No. They divorced prior to that. So my dad, yeah, he was just something else, like physically abusive. Like I saw it all growing up, you know what I mean? And it was actually me who persuaded my mom to get us out so we could run away from my dad. Cause I was so afraid that he would eventually end up killing her or taking her life. And I knew he didn't love us the way she did. No one stops to think, oh, we should probably talk to this kid about what's happening. So at least you can have somebody to sort of guide how you process and digest the information that you're receiving. Because that mixed with freaking watching Santa Barbara and Dallas and Dynasty and Skippy the Bush Kangaroo and whatever's happening at school and all those kinds of things. Like it just causes just a world of confusion, I think, for a child who's just trying to establish just basic fundamentals of what a normal life should be.
Do you mean that because you're seeing a very different image in the shows that you're watching versus what you're experiencing in real life? Is that what you mean by that?
Well, yeah. Well, I think what happens is I think structure is very important for anyone, you know, whether it's a kid or a dog, you know, from the outset, the moment they're born, right? Like they will do whatever they're told, you know, so you introduce them into a system, they will exist within that system, right? Same thing with children. But then if you leave them rampant and just allow them to just leave them to their own devices, right? They're going to develop a system of their own that's going to be foreign to them and to you. And by the time you realize, oops, this kid could be a problem kid, it's going to be too late to bring him back. And my mom realized that when I was about 9, because obviously I didn't grow up in a very stable household and dad was absent and I was just angry, rebellious. No one spoke to me about what had happened to me as a child. So I just started just acting out. And that's when she started dragging my ass to church, like almost every second day, because she didn't know what to do with me. And fortunately enough, there was a man there who was, the head, like the youth department and stuff. And he took a particular liking to me and decided to mentor me. And had it not been for this guy who'd just be on my case, like for the following 5 years of my teenagehood, God knows what kind of person I would have turned out to be. You know what I mean? Because I almost felt as though I had every excuse not to make it in life. Every excuse to fail because my parents had failed me. No one had showed me what success looked like, even in a relationship or family environment, you know, which is where it should all start, right? Charity begins at home. So even that, those fundamental things that most people take for granted that come from those households, if you don't grow up in that system, like that's going to affect you later on. So there's a reason my dad replicated his dad's cycle. You know what I mean? It's no one told him any other way it should be done. You know what I mean? So you do what you're taught as a child. And once it's in the system, it's a really, really difficult thing to unlearn.
Again, I think it's like when you're living in it, people have this attitude where when they hear about this stuff, they're like, oh, it's this crazy otherworldly thing. But for you, it's like, no, that's just Tuesday. So it's like this normalization that can happen with it, which can be strange for people who aren't in it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's another thing, coming from a conservative society and environment, It's not open to people sharing those kinds of things. So anytime anything went down at home, I'd be told not to talk to anybody about it. You know, you didn't see anything, you didn't hear anything. This is family business. But no one would talk to me about it. You know, so you're just carrying all of this stuff.
Right. So they didn't have a space at the school for you to talk to people, or was it kind of like you felt it yourself?
I went to an all boys Jesuit Catholic school from like my first grade all the way up to my last year of high school. But then the counseling services, well, once again, like it's grade 1 to 3, you know, back in the '90s, like, you know, they weren't like guidance counselors for like, they didn't think kids probably had those kinds of issues. Plus being like an all boys Jesuit Catholic school, we had nuns there, you know, so I guess it would be assumed that structure would exist if counseling were ever needed, you know, but you're a kid, you don't just go and like just utter stuff like that. Plus the fear of consequences. Like if you're going to rat your dad out, they're going to have to call your dad in to verify the information, and he's going to verify that ass whooping when you get home. You know what I mean? So, and my mom could have copped it too, because he would have blamed her for it, thinking she got me to go and, you know, and rat him out. So that's just to give you context into why I said yes at that graduation discussion we had. You know, like, I was like, man, you've been through a lot for us, and it's not a big ask.
Put in the time and develop the career a little bit.
And retrospectively, like, I think that's like the best thing that could have ever happened. I feel almost the world is changing, but at the moment, as things stand, being a person of color, being a black person, you've got to be special if you really want to make it to the upper echelons of anything, any industry. You know what I mean? So you've got to be exceptional.
So, like, as in, I guess I've got a few questions in relation to that. Firstly, in Zimbabwe, is that the case still there? I don't actually know the demographics. Is it quite, it's mostly black though. You wouldn't have this kind of white cultural, you don't need to act white in Zimbabwe, I guess.
You do to an extent. I'll tell you why. Because we're an ex-British colony, right? Zimbabwe ended up having heaps of white people live there. So, for example, the school I went to, pretty much 50% black, 50% white. Majority of my teachers were white. I remember even growing up as a kid, my dad would not let me speak my native tongue because he said, you need to master English because it's one of the most complicated languages to learn. And if you can master that, you've got a better chance of being anything you want to be in this world. Your mother tongue will come to you naturally because you're constantly surrounded by your own people and your culture's all around you. So it will come to you, but you've got to master English. And he did that because he knew a lot of industries, particularly at that time, were run by either white corporations or white business executives, you know. So there was always that expectation, especially going to a private school. You're speaking English all the time. You're speaking to white teachers, and you've got that British culture like heavily ingrained, even down to the school uniforms, you know, like you're freaking in like 30 degree temperatures and stuff and got to wear suits. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like you're wearing a blazer all day, every day, you know, best dress, longs, you know what I mean? Shirt, tie, long sleeve shirts, you know, it's, you know, and a hat.
Like a part of me love that because like back in the day when you see the footage of like, it's not like the English weren't doing it themselves. They were just sticking to this dress code. It's like.
But it's cool. It's cool because at the same time, right? Like even here, like even practicing as a lawyer, if you're in a corporate kind of job, whatever, right? You know, you got to wear your suit, right? A true gentleman knows no weather. You know, sometimes you got to do what you got to do. You've got to look the part. You know what I mean? You've got to look the part. And that's another key thing. Like even my mom always used to teach us this. Like she's like, look, when she divorced my dad, she always used to say, look, a lot of people from your dad's family don't like me and they think I'm to blame for the relationship not working out. You know, even though my dad's with like all these other women, but anyway.
So no, and the history of it.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, like it's just, you know, it's an alternative fact,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
She would always say, I will break my back to provide for my kids, but I don't want the evidence of it to be hidden. When you leave the household, I buy you clothes so that you can be respectable. You can be respected. You can walk around with pride. And I don't want people to know you don't have a dad present in your lives. You know, I want to make life as normal as possible. So she would go through like freaking like color coordination, like situation, like she would teach us how to dress. Like, there's a reason I dress the way I dress, you know, to this day.
I was going to say, you got some snappy dressing going on even now when you walked in here.
Hey, thanks, bro. You know what? You know what that tells me about you? You got good taste. thanks, man.
Let's talk about the book. Because it's highly related. A lot of what you've said until now has been so related to the choice of book. Even from a personal perspective, I'm really interested to unpack that. So just to go into that, your book of choice for today is?
Yeah. So it's called Mugabe, Teacher, Revolutionary, Tyrant by Andrew Norman. And it's a fascinating take on the individual, Robert Mugabe. So Robert Mugabe was the president of Zimbabwe and was in power for about 3 decades. The international community initially embodied him as the darling of Africa, leading up to the independence of Zimbabwe in 1980. And he presented himself as a very well-spoken slash articulate, considerate, post-war thinking revolutionary who originally was a very staunch and devout member of the guerrilla guerrilla warriors or fighters who fought against the British Empire, who had colonized Zimbabwe. And he was handpicked by the British Empire to be the one to become president of Zim.
And, oh, okay. And then, I didn't realize that they'd started it.
Oh, yeah, they always started. Like, that's the reason you end up, I guess, in that position, you know, and you end up having a lot of, I'm not saying he was, but a lot of puppet leaders, you know, like you are appointed, you know, you're not democratically elected, you know, that's a rare thing to occur. And the reason for that is because for those that have been able to occupy power, particularly if it's illegally, have to ensure that the transition of power is something that is still within their grasp. They don't necessarily need to be the face of it anymore, but they still need to be in control.
So firstly, Mugabe, he's probably the number one known dictator in the world right now in terms of everyone knows his name as that, I guess, in terms of culturally. Yeah.
Well, I think that's the term that he's been given by, I guess, mainstream international media. I'm not saying he was, I'm not saying he wasn't, but that's the point of the book, because it gives a very intrinsic forensic analysis of not necessarily just the publicly known indiscretions of the subject matter being Mugabe, but it gives you a detailed analysis of this person's psyche and upbringing, and allows you to, on some level, not necessarily be sympathetic, but to be able to empathize to the extent that you can as to why certain individuals make the choices that they make, not just based on the positions they're in, but based on just their cultural, religious, and intellectual makeup, and also just experiences that they go through in life.
Yeah, and this might be where I'm showing my ignorance a little bit, this subject matter, because essentially, from my understanding, was he in power his whole life? Like, did he die and that's when he finished, or did he transition? I'm not sure how the last part of his life.
No, so there was a coup d'etat, I think, about 2 years prior to him passing away. But he was in power for, it wasn't his whole life, so he would have been about, I'd say, he died in his 90s, so we've been in power from about 60, you know, up until, you know, 90 something.
Like, so it's 30 years, 30 plus years. And obviously, in considering right now, that's probably 30 plus very transformative years in the country's growth or whatever, just because of globalization and how much everything got more interconnected during that period. Is that right? Or was that impacting things?
That's why I say, like, I'm a helicopter sort of view type person. So for me, things aren't black and white most of the times. They're always gray. So I always challenge people when they interpret anything from a different culture, or say African, for example, like we're using here, to always line it up with the Western equivalent, because y'all have had monarchies for God knows how long, right?
Hey, I'm...
You get what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying.
So it does come across rather hypocritical to label one person who may not necessarily be in line with the ethos of whatever the West may want of him for God knows how long, versus Henry VIII doing whatever the hell he wanted, starting his own church, own religion, because he couldn't marry the woman he wanted.
I'm actually currently reading a book about that. Yeah, it's very
interesting. You know what I mean? So it's interesting.
Like, I guess the only counter I would say to that is one doesn't cancel out the other, though.
Oh, absolutely so not. Absolutely
I
not.
I think you're right in terms
but
of
But it gives context,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like glass houses context. Sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
But at the same time, like, I think the general idea is authoritarian regimes of any kind are never great.
Yeah, well, wasn't it Orwell who may have been, who said, you know, absolute power corrupts absolutely. I'm not sure if it was him, but yeah, but I'm familiar with that quote. But having said that, I think this is the importance of history, right? You see, the issue we have with institutions that introduce a curriculum in schools, right, is that history can be something that is shared from the perspective of the person in power, or the person trying to manage a society or control a society, right? And I've heard it once said that history is often told from the perspective of the victor, you know, and that's very true. You know, we get bombarded with information that is designed to teach us to process and think or view things in a particular way. And sometimes unless you immerse yourself in the environment, which is the subject of discussion or the subject of opinion or rhetoric, it's very, very difficult to think outside of the box or get some degree of context as to why certain people do certain things. You know what I mean?
I just, out of curiosity, when you're saying when did Mugabe get, when did he leave power? When did that finish?
3-4 years ago now.
3-4 years ago, all right. So you, when you were growing up, you were in a time where, I guess, the victor was Mugabe, right? So in terms of the history that you would have been taught and stuff like that, was it actually reflective of that? Was it kind of telling a story that obviously, again, I'm not saying that there's good and bad, everything's multifaceted.
Yeah, absolutely.
But in terms
absolutely.
Of maybe in that sense, you were actually getting taught when you were growing up a view which was very pro Mugabe's reign. Was that a thing that was the case then?
No, my argument here is that by virtue of power being gifted to you by the British Empire, who colonized your country, right, you are at their mercy. So the idea of independence isn't symbolic, but you're still at the mercy of their financial institutions. You're at the mercy of their cultures. Like, it's no mistake that I went to an all-boy Jesuit Catholic school that, you know, live in the tropics, but you're still dressing as though you live in the North Pole, which is crazy, right? Yeah. Like, that's the norm. You know, even the public schools where the poor kids go to school, they got to dress like that too. You know what I mean? The fact that English is an official language, you know, the fact that, you know, your heritage for a large man has been eradicated because of what happened during colonization, right? And then the way the independence is gifted to you wasn't in transitional way in which it empowered the people that were left with the land. It was just the British Empire saying, "Ah, oh, we're tired. We're going to go back home." You know what I mean? Like, so it's like, oh,
we
by
got
the
some
way,
shit going on back home. Yeah, we're going
to
go.
Yeah, we're good. We're good. But we still want to have access to your resources, your gold, your diamonds, you know, and we don't want to pay taxes for that. So how about we put some multinational companies that will stay here on behalf of the state, just make sure they keep an eye on everything. And we're just going to go back because everything's all good back home. Yeah, just give us a call if you need anything, okay? But so we want you to manage. We don't want you to necessarily rule. So you're managing this for us whilst we're in absentia. You know what I mean? So that's the idea, I think, of independence when I say it was symbolic. You know, it wasn't something that, like, the guerrilla warriors like fought for and overpowered the British Empire, because that wasn't going to go down, nor were they going to let it happen that way. So it was never anything quite like that. And when you realize that, okay, fine, now you're stuck with this country, right? But then everything that's modern about it, right? You were never allowed into the rooms where this stuff was developed. So when you start talking about the Dow Jones, you start talking about, you know, any financial concepts or institutions or currencies or schools or infrastructure and the rest of it, you were never allowed into those meetings. So one, you don't know how to maintain that stuff. Two, you don't know where it came from. Three, you don't know where to get more of it. And four, whoever set all these things in motion has no particular interest in you anymore to want to keep investing in the maintenance of those things. So you just stuck with this stuff and you're like, oh, it's good because it's running, but there's going to come a point where if we don't keep feeding this system with whatever it was being fed with, we're going to lose it all and everything is going to just, you know, come to a screaming halt. And a lot of countries in Africa that were colonized found themselves in that position.
Like, it's interesting you're saying that because, like, I guess that's definitely true. In terms, and that actually goes back to your point about the gatekeepers. Until you change the gatekeepers, you can't change anything. Yeah. But also, on top of that, you also have the person who's in charge who then needs to go and do all those things, which would be very difficult in any circumstance, who was actually selected by the British to be there and maintain the control he has and the friends he has. So he's in a position where he doesn't really want to develop things further, you could argue. Like, I'm not saying that's the case. I don't know what Mugabe's mind worked, but
if you're the help, right? And all you get to do is come in and serve, you know, the lady at the manor, and you live outside, you know, serving quarters all the time, right? And one day the lady of the manor says, you know what? I'm gonna leave. You know, you have the manor, it's all yours, right? Do with it as you will. I'll keep an eye on it and the rest of it, but you can take care of it for now, right? You're going to jump at the opportunity only because you've longed to want to experience what that comfort felt like, you know? And you promised yourself at that time when you accepted the opportunity that, look, it's only going to be temporary because I'm going to take care of all the other servants and I want them all to live in the manor. But, you know, maybe for the first 3 to 6 months, I just want to live the way the lady, the man, you know what I mean? Yeah. And it's just like someone who wins the lottery overnight, you know, but they've been on maybe social welfare benefits and overnight they win $200 million, you know, unless your psyche is set up to know how to manage that kind of money, you know, you're going to manage it as though you're living on those social services payments, right?
And be surrounded by people who probably were already there to then take advantage of you and your ignorance.
Well, one, why would I move out after 3 to 6 months to go back into the servants' quarters, right? That's the first thing. And secondly, why would I let any of the servants move in? Do you know what I mean? And then you start to understand the psyche of the colonial master in terms of wanting that self-preservation. Like, why would I give up this comfort? Like, you know what I mean? And what price am I going to pay to relinquish some of this stuff? Maybe I should just maintain the status quo. Yeah, because I can manage this. I can predict what's going to happen here, but I just need to maintain control, you know? So then once you understand, oh, okay. So Mugabe stepped into the shoes of what a white oppressor was in this whole time, but was never under any scrutiny for it, right? Then you go through your curriculum in terms of how you educated school, right? We're taught English first, right? Before our native tongue. So already you're like, wait, this is rigged. You know what I mean? And much to our benefit that we do learn English because it is the language of the world, I guess. Well, not even for now because, nah, let's just... We'll leave China out of it. But they definitely...
Well, they're not, China's bigger, but it's not as global in terms of...
True.
You're not going to meet a Swiss businessman and both speak Chinese to each other. So in terms of the lingua franca of the world...
It's crazy you say this, man, but you tell me which nation in the world has a representation in pretty much every corner of the world. And I'm not just talking about population. I'm talking about having your own city.
Yeah.
Your own town. This is a Chinatown Earl.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, and when they're there, you're going to have signs in Mandarin just letting you know, like, oh, no, they don't speak your language. So, you know what I mean? Like, I was shocked when I went to Zim, like, 5 years ago, 7 years ago, when I first went back, since I'd been here, to study. And I rocked up the airport and all these signs in Mandarin. I was like, what the hell's going on here? I had no idea.
I have heard that there's been a huge focus of Chinese investment has been in Africa in general.
It's major. It's major, bro.
Because of, like, I think access to the resources as well as...
Yeah.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Also challenging the Western colonial powers in terms of countries that they claim to have influence over. Because a lot of it is not necessarily just about having a regional presence or territorial advantage, but it's also about saying, well, if we want to have our populations is, you know, it's we can't be able to maintain, you know, like, I don't know, like 2 billion people in a single country. So we want to create another like sub China in Africa or whatever, and we need space. So we will start developing the infrastructure. It's just,
kind of like what you feel is an element of what's going on?
Well, I think it's just a more sophisticated version of colonization, you know?
Really?
I mean? Whereas
is there actually like a lot of moving in of Chinese into Africa?
Oh, yeah. Buildings, infrastructure, businesses, you name it, investment. But what it is like, you know, I always say when the West did it, when the British Empire did it, right? Or when the Europeans colonized, it was by force. It was with guns. When the Chinese do it, it's with cash, you know? So they know how to finesse, you know? You know, they'll persuade you, you know, in a way that may appear advantageous to you at the time. But then to me, that's more business transactional. So that's on you. You know what I mean? Like, you're not being forced. You're just in a tight situation. You know what I mean?
Is that not forced then?
No, it's not forced because you're being presented with an opportunity. So you're like, give me the money. Only because your back's against the wall financially,
that
right?
That sounds like not a choice.
Well, it is a choice. You could say no.
Well, you could say no to an oppressor with a gun. You're just going to get shot.
No, but that's different. That's not a choice. That's not a choice. Because you with this other option, you get to live. This other one, you don't. Like, there is no choice. Like, whether you say yes or no, you're dead. Like, it's RIP. That's a different situation. So the methods of that are just so different, like, I think, you know? And I think when you have someone with a gun to your head, you're stripped of power. So there is no choice. In this situation, someone is coming with a proposal to you, but you're just in a bad place. Or you are that greedy or that corrupt that you see the immediate benefit unto yourself and whoever your cronies are, and you take that at face value. And you totally negate, you know, the generational impact that's going to have. You know what I mean? But there's definitely a power component there. Like, they don't have a gun to your head.
So there's a few things I want to comment there. And like, even with that, it's interesting that you could say the same thing with Mugabe and the British, and him getting handed that is almost in some ways the similar thing you could say, where he didn't have a gun to his head, yeah. But he was in a spot where he's like, this benefits me to do this.
Well, not just that, but I think in this particular instance, right, there was no gun to his head. The British Empire is done with Rhodesia at the time. So they were leaving anyway. So if he said no, they just picked somebody else. So that was inevitable. Like, it's different. But what I will say,
but that's what I'm saying. It's a choice. It's not a gun to the head, is a case where it's like, I'm in a spot where I'm going to choose to do this.
Oh, absolutely. But having said that, I think that's why this book is very important, because I remember anyway at school spending a big chunk of my history lessons in terms of the curriculum, not just being devoted to Woodrow Wilson and the First World War and how all that went down, right? But the Second World War and Hitler. And understanding and breaking down the psyche of the man, his history, his origins, you know, like, where did this guy come from? Why was he so angry? You know, why did he end up doing the things he did? There was so much in the school curriculum that was invested in us understanding how this guy, or why this guy became a monster. But it's funny though, that when it comes to someone like Mugabe, right? Like, I had to go find this book, like, it's a difficult book to find. Like, I was just lucky to just come across it, where it deals with like just that psyche. And it's not even a defense of the person, but it's to understand.
Yeah. Like I've always said, understanding does not mean justifying.
Oh, no, not at all.
Funny you're saying that, because I don't think you would find much in Australian schooling, from my experience, that does anything in terms of trying to understand Hitler. Like, that's definitely not done at all.
Yeah. I don't think
it's done all anyway in Western countries.
Yeah, but I think the way it's done is there's an overall understanding in terms of how these wars come into being. There's always context to a lot of stuff. Not context in terms of a justification for what occurred, you know? Because bad is bad, you know? There's no persuading anyone, you know, that's not the case. But over time, and even with the internet, like, it's just that information is there. You try to find something on the internet that just breaks down the psyche of any African dictator and see if you're going to come across that. You go for Hitler, go.
It's gonna be a lot.
Do you know what I'm saying? And it's the same thing, like, you know, you've got the Holocaust that went down. You know what I mean? And what's the slogan for that? You know, never forget, right? And why? So that it never happens again, right? Okay. Now, whenever, you know, an African speaks about colonization or African Americans speak about the slave trade, first thing they're told to do is shut up, forget about it. It happened so long ago.
Yeah.
Facts, right?
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, but never forget. You know what I mean? Like, I remember Germany had to pay reparations for the Holocaust, right?
Still paying them.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And African Americans will never get reparations.
No.
African nations will never get reparations and still be stripped off.
And indigenous people here.
100%.
Mm.
Bring it back home. So when you look at it from that angle, it's not about saying, oh, let's excuse what you may call a dictator for what they did. It's no. Let's put this in context because we're making something that maybe the West started and were far more skilled at, right? And knew exactly what they were doing and implemented and forced it upon it. Yeah. Like they came in, they knew what they were doing, right? And they multiplied or franchised that model, right? Internationally, right? And then that one African leader that does what he's been taught to do by the colonizer, then is like the worst person in the world. No. We're not saying this leader is good, but let's unpack how they ended up learning how to do that.
Yeah. Look,
that's where I'm coming from because I think that's the root of it because that's the truth of it as well. Because if you can unpack that, then we start going back to the root of all of this. Then we can go and deal with the gatekeepers. But as long as the gatekeepers can keep their hands clean, we're not dealing with any issues. You know what I mean? Like Trump is not the problem.
Yeah, the system that produces and maintains someone like that is the problem. Yeah. Tom, if this is
too far, but
I do think it's interesting when you talk about this because from what we discussed at the start with your own dad and stuff that's happened there, it's interesting because you're treating, I guess, do you look at him with the same level of like understanding? It sounds like you do. Like you're applying that same attitude. I guess it's two-parted, I guess, but like did you always have that understanding or did that develop later towards your dad, I guess?
Brilliant question. And it's something that is constantly on my evolution list because it keeps growing with my worldview and my life experiences, right? So when I was a kid, I was so angry at my dad because of what I saw him do to my mother and what I saw him do to us, right? But as I grew older, right, and I started to realize, well, once religion got introduced into my world in a real way, and once people disappointed me outside of like the spectrum of like my family and people that I would see even on a world stage make mistakes and be forgiven and come back and realize that, okay, fine. I may have had a very difficult upbringing as a child, but I'm not the only one that had challenges of this nature or challenges of any nature that could possibly transform one's worldview, right? So as you grow up, you start to just absorb a lot of information and experiences and also through mistakes of my own as well, right? And then you start to find grace and you realize, oh, okay, it's not that easy. Okay. Okay. I thought, okay, cool. Right. Okay. Maybe when you made that decision, he didn't know that these would be the repercussions that would put him in this position and he would be in a situation where he'd still make a decision to do certain things, you know? So having that in mind, yes, as I've grown older, I've developed, I think, I won't say forgiveness yet at this stage, but a tolerance and an appreciation for certain elements or decisions that played a part in him being the way that he ended up being. So for example, the example of his dad, you know, that was a cycle that his dad triggered, right? And no one in his family made a deliberate effort to pull him out of that way of thinking or that worldview. So when he got introduced to women, you know, thinking he comes from royalty, he can do whatever he wants, this, that, and the third, he ends up doing what he does. He gets money, and that just, you know, inflates like that bravado, that ego, And he ends up being, you know, a far worse version of what he would be if he were a poor guy, right? So I come into the cycle with my mom. My mom realizes we could have this happen again. And then whether it's the grace of God or chance or whatever it is, parents get divorced, dad goes to jail, so he's out of the picture. Mom yanks me out of that, plugs me into a different system, which is church, right? So automatically now I'm looking at a different father figure, you know, being God, right? So my trajectory immediately starts to make a dramatic shift, right? So I'm starting to see the world and interpret things in a different way. So whilst that was a good thing, it still didn't allow me to deal with the substantive issues that were at the core of this generational pressure that came. You know what I mean? So it still complicated it, right?
It's a lot like the system's not being set up for you to have your own independence.
Exactly.
Like you
exactly.
haven't done it yourself. You've
exactly.
been taken there, so you have.
Exactly. So there's a lot of things I'm going to be, or I'll be the first to do in my family because of things that happened to allow me to be in the position I'm in, but also because of decisions my mother actively made on my behalf to plug me into systems that would help me
break the cycle.
Unlearn or break the cycle. Correct. So with that, I think getting a fair bit of success of my own. I remember telling someone for the first time, I think when I was 22, that my dad had been in prison and except I couldn't tell anyone that stuff because it was just so embarrassing and, you know, you'd be looked down upon. So you'd never tell anyone. I actually broke down as a grown man at like 22 or something, like just freaking out. Like, I'm telling somebody about this and I've been carrying the weight of this and the weight of his identity for his transgressions. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was carrying that as though that were me. So you start to unpack that as you grow older and you gain your own success, your own trajectory to, you know, your own trajectory in terms of what you want to end up being. And because I ended up okay, I stopped blaming him for the head start I should have had if he were in my life. You get what I'm saying? So I let him off the hook in that. So that provides a healing component to me, which is great. You know what I mean? Maybe it's the same grace I will even offer to a Mugabe, for instance, because we didn't leave Zim because it was a good idea to go and study overseas. I left Zim because if I had stayed, I would have been a burden to my mother and my brothers. So I left to get a better opportunity overseas. You get what I'm saying? Yeah. But having said that, the curriculum weren't set up the way that it was under his regime. I didn't go to the schools I went to. I didn't learn English the way I did. All these kinds of things, right? Like my school was next door to his house, like the president's house.
Oh, really?
Yeah. His kids went to my school.
Oh, so, damn. Yeah, so yeah. You got, your dad was royalty of some kind.
So we're good. But up to a certain point.
Yeah, yeah. And then it switched.
But then mom had to end up inheriting that burden, like keeping us in private school, bursaries, you know what I mean? All that kind of stuff, just so we could stay there. Cause she was like, education is key. Like, if there's anything, like, we'd rather go without food than you stop going to the schools you're going to. Cause that's going to feed you one day.
And it sounds like, especially because of the connections and stuff
you
can make
absolutely.
There.
Absolutely. And even like just the sense of confidence, right? Like, so for example, right? You're a white dude. I'm a black dude, right? Like, had
I'm
I not
Greek.
Gone to
I don't know if I'm white technically, but you know, there, I think
I'm you cross the line. Cross the line.
Yeah.
You're good. Now you are. Yeah. even certain things that people may overlook, right? So for instance, we come from a British colony that oppressed black people, right? So for us, the way we were trained to view white people was as gods, as kings, as queens, you know what I mean? As being that far above us, you know what I mean? So even for me to be able to have a conversation like you, like this, with the confidence I've got and the clarity of thought and all those kinds of things, right? Like these are all things I learned from being in a white school with white kids and dealing with them on a day-to-day basis. I've got other friends or cousins who went to all black schools, you know, that may not necessarily have had that opportunity, you know what I mean? So it takes a lot more to develop that kind of like confidence to even stand in front of people. I was president of Toastmasters at my school. Do you know what I mean? Like those kinds of things that they just really, really, we didn't realize it at that time, but we're virtually being trained to be chameleons or be statesmen from anywhere or anywhere else in the world, because no matter where you're going to place any of us in the world, we're going to hustle and find our way, you know, into that
system.
You're
going to know how to survive. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. And you're going to have the drive because of your background and where you've come from.
Yeah.
To probably go the extra mile compared to what people who come from something more comfortable.
Exactly. I can come here, be a lawyer, you know, for a minute and decide, you know, I'm going to be a rapper. You know what I mean?
I'm be a president. Like, you know, to do your full law thing and then on the day you graduate to be like, all right, I'm not going to do the rest. It's like, you've already done so much work. Like, at least go
do something. Are you crazy? Go do something. You know what I mean? But in saying that as well, just so I can clarify as well, just so I don't come across as though like I'm like a spoiled brat or anything like that. Like, it's not like I'm incredibly gifted or anything like that. But whilst I was in the church, I understood two things, right? There's two elements. There's a career and there's a vocation. So your career is something that you go to an institution to get trained, right? So you'll get a skill set for it. So for me, it was to be a lawyer. I wasn't born with just that lawyer acumen or whatever, right? So went, learn how to do that. But I went there so I could work for somebody, right? And even in that system, I understood that unless I'm a partner, my value in this institution or in this industry is always going to be regulated by whoever the gatekeeper is, right? So they don't tell me what I'm worth, right? Doesn't matter how good I am or what I do until I own some equity in this company, right? Then we can start talking about the big bucks, right? But your vocation is something that's innate. You're born with that. Like, that's a God-given gift. Like, that's just inherently inside you. You may go to an institution, go polish it up. You know what I mean? But you can't teach that. You know, either you know how to rock a crowd of 100,000 people or you don't. You know what I mean? Either you know how to make those hit songs or you don't. Either you're charismatic like Will Smith and you don't go for training on how to be an actor and you just land a role on Fresh Prince and your life changes, you know? So I learned, okay, fine. I've got this skill set where I'm able to engage with people, rock crowds, write music and the rest of it. But also if I stay just being a lawyer, which is a fantastic thing, but I would be limited to a peer review in terms of my progression. Even if I wanted to go into public office, like I've got to go up the ladder like everybody else.
Yeah.
But then if I've got like this cheat code, which just puts me in front of people, which could potentially make me a celebrity, that then puts me in front of the gatekeepers anyway, they're like, oh, intelligent, cool. Okay. Black kid. Okay.
Yeah.
He's all right. Cool. Hey. Oh, you want to be there? Yeah, sure. You know what I mean? That's a cheat code. So instead of it taking me 20 years to get there, I may be able to make it in 10.
And make it being president of Zimbabwe.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the goal, man. That's the goal.
I love that. Like, we have to call it soon. That's why I have to, stop the thing. But I guess, just very quickly then, even though we've kind of jumped around a little bit in terms of the Mugabe stuff and all that, which is super interesting, how are you going to be president of Zimbabwe?
That's up to the gods, isn't it? That's really a God question. All I know is, I've got to set myself up on this path and align myself with the trajectory of whatever skill set and giftings that I have. And if there's anything I've learned from my life to this day, I have no business standing or sitting across the table from you today, given my history and my background. I'm literally a miracle, work of God, you know?
Considering where you came from.
Yeah. I shouldn't be here. It doesn't make sense that I should be in front of you. You know, it's a blessing, you know, and every opportunity, every link, even like I was saying, like coming here, you know, writing to all these 10 businessmen. And it so happened to be the very last person that I went to see. And he said, I'll pay for your first mess so you can get a visa to get in. You know what I mean? Do you know how many times like the university like canceled my enrollment and like hit up immigration because I was behind on my school fees and stuff? You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, like my heart would skip a beat and not for myself in terms of like, oh, I got to go home, but just the disappointment I was not looking forward to seeing in my mom's face after everything she'd sacrificed. Like that was the weight that I was feeling, you know, and you get suicidal, you know, thinking that like, I'd rather die than have to face my mom with that disappointment, you know, because everyone put everything into me making it. You know what I mean? So when you realize like, your life's been set up like that. And a lot of it's my mom's prayers, man. Like I understand like just the calling. It's way bigger than me being a lawyer. That's why it didn't cut it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And then I was going for more, you know, now, you know, I'm doing this, you know, with the entertainment stuff and all with a plan to get it. That's why the goal is so outrageous because I've got to think like that early on, and everything that I do, I've got to have that in the back of my head because I just know it's a calling. It's just where I'm headed.
It's amazing and very impressive.
And I fly over my private jet for lunch, you know.
You better, yeah.
Taxpayer money.
Okay, I guess the yes, we have jumped around, and I love the connection point between, like, yes, the system that created Mugabe and what kept him there. Because the other thing that kept him there would have been the fear of what people would do if he left.
Oh, absolutely.
Which again is exactly.
You know, it's the very reason why Trump is holding on and not conceding, because the moment he's off, all the immunity that comes with being president is out the window. Then he's got all these court cases pending that he's got to deal with, right? It's more than just got to do it for the American people. No. It's got nothing to do with it. It's way bigger than that, but it's a self-preservation thing. But also pay attention to even just how he had already aligned his family from a lineage point of view to pass on the presidential legacy to. You know, Ivanka was already in there, her husband was already in there, his son's already in there. Do you know what I mean? Like, heavily involved. Like, the cycle.
Very similar.
You know, and this is just on a microcosmic level. Right? Of like the serious problem that really, you know, exists. You even see it from, you've got the exact same thing happening within the party system, right? So, you had, okay, let's say you had Obama in. Okay, you have Clinton, right? We're talking just Democrats now. You have Clinton for a minute. Clinton does his two terms, right? And Hillary's waiting in the wings, right? And then she's supposed to be next in line, right? And then by some weird, miraculous situation, she loses the primary to this first-time senator, Barack Obama, out of nowhere, right? And they're like, damn it. So she can't get it. So they let him in, right? But then the American public are like, ooh, we never seen a black Arab sounding name dude like become president. So they attach Biden to him just to calm everybody, right? And then he's safe. So he goes in, then makes Hillary Secretary of State, right? But then obviously there's an understanding that, okay, next time around, it's going to be your turn, right? This is all legacy, lineage.
Yeah.
You know, like the gatekeepers just maintaining, right? And just handing the ball to each other. You know, it's like they're playing for the same rugby team or same soccer team. And then Hillary goes in, messes her chances up, right? And then boom. And they're like, okay, cool. Who else is familiar? Who's been part of the system? Ah, hey, Sleepy Joe, what up? Yo, wake up. You're up, you know? And then he's in, but he's tied to a bomb. So it passes on. Do you know what I'm saying? So it's a cycle. It's endemic. It's there. Like it's a virus, but it's a gatekeeper issue more than it is, oh, this guy is president and they symbolize power, or whatever, but don't actually really have power.
So you've put both, you've slung both parties together in a comparison to Mugabe. I rate that. I guess the last thing I always ask is, did you feel like you, have any different connections now with the book Mugabe from our conversation or having another think about it?
I think it's a gift, because one thing I feel maybe for me as a takeaway is, and I can apply this to my dad as well, I can apply it to Trump, I can apply it to Obama, is that leaders aren't a monolith, you know, dictators, as we like to call them, aren't a monolith. Like they're very nuanced beings. And we all embody elements of those people within us. And before we do pass judgment on them as people, not on their actions, but them as people, we should ask ourselves to honestly and truthfully answer, if we were put in those positions, which majority of us have never been put in, right? Would we have done everything we could have to preserve ourselves and our positions and our titles, and also to protect ourselves from the things we had to do to get in those positions and provide for our families, provide for our loved ones, provide for our friends. You know what I mean? That is the question. Because if we are to be honest about it, if we are going to be very righteous about our perspective towards our leaders in general, and I speak for myself, hopefully in the future, because I do want the same grace afforded to me.
You're taking yourself from now. Yeah.
You know, so it's in the archives.
I feel so used
now. It's too late.
It's a PR campaign.
It's too late. Man, you're in there, baby. You're in there.
Respect your leaders is what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. You know, what you don't, you respect the office. Yeah, you definitely respect the office. And don't necessarily trust the leader. But I think what I'm trying to say is that let's not be hypocritical, because if we are going to be righteous about it, then we live in comfort over here. And we are very much aware of the majority of the world that doesn't. But are we willing to relinquish our luxury, you know, for them to have a better life? And the reality is, and the truth of the matter is, no, we're not. We're not actively making that effort. We'd rather see no evil, hear no evil, and every now and then make ourselves feel good when we do a good thing. You know, like, I'm not speaking for everybody generally, but I'm just saying, you know, like, I'm not gonna lie, like, you know, I wouldn't mind spending $20 on a cocktail then giving it to Oxfam. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the truth, you know? And it's not as though I don't know that this could go further building a well for someone in the country I want to go and lead one day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But self-preservation, you know what I mean? It's a Friday thing. You know what I'm saying? Okay.
We're all
waiting for me. You know what I mean?
You've ended making everyone listening very uncomfortable, and I rate that.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? But we're all in this cesspool of filth, you know? And the moment, like, I think the key to it is just unlocking our consciousness to that reality. And the moment we do, you know, it's like the pot calling the kettle black. Like, we're just in no position to pass judgment straight away. Like, don't throw stones if you live in a glass house. Same thing, you know, right? So we just need to, I think, yeah, just get that space where we're just like, okay, look, the world's screwed up and we need to work on how to just make it better for everybody. And we start by having a libertarian, I guess, perspective. Like, people have your freedoms as long as whatever you do doesn't infringe or hurt other people. You know what I mean? I think that's where it starts from. Let's just stop hurting each other. Then we can work on the healing.
Yeah, and also understand that we're all the same in some way. So it's not just one guy who's bad. It's the system itself which might need fixing in situations. So it's too easy to write things off as this one person. It's like, no, that's a person in a situation that impacts it.
It's not a black thing. It's not a white thing. It's not an Asian thing. It's a human thing. You know, Adam and Eve had the same issues. You know what I'm saying? Like, and we don't even know. Yeah, damn Apple, man. You know what I mean? But it was the devil, the system. You know? But God created the system. Yeah. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
why
let the homie in? You know what I mean? Like, you know, and why allow them to be tempted, right? And then so begin. So it's, you know, we've got elements of things we just need to take away. And, you know, the humanity aspect that we too can fall short like any of these guys. And when we are in those situations, let's focus on the truth aspect, not on the persuasive component.
Yeah, yeah.
And then hopefully we can fix some stuff, you know?
No, definitely. And I didn't think I'd be doing an episode about not justifying, but understanding Robert Mugabe. So thank you for that.
Yeah, no.
But we better call it off there. Yeah, so just thank you very much for being on.
No, thanks for the platform, man. This is amazing. I don't think I've ever spoken this much about this kind of subject matter. Like,
no worries. Well, thank you very much. Cheers.
No, thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you want to help support this show and all the other shows we do here at Sans Pants Radio, then why not subscribe to SansPantsPlus.com? For as little as $5 a month, you could have access to a whole bunch of bonus shows and content. Once again, that's SansPantsPlus.com.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.